You're listening to event audio from the Brookings Events Podcast, part of the Brookings Podcast Network. For more in-depth analysis and commentary from Brookings scholars and our guests, go to brookings.edu/podcasts or listen via Apple Podcasts on Spotify or your favorite podcast app. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Policy Podcasts.
Hello, everyone. My name is Yuling Chang. I'm with Kidsburg. It's exciting to be here today. I'm excited to introduce you to two parents. So first, I'd like to introduce Dori Taylor.
Hi, Yuling. Thanks for having me. My name is Dori Taylor, and family is of utmost importance to me. So I'm a daughter, a daughter-in-law, a sister-in-law, cousin, auntie. And here at home, I am a wife and mother of two. I have two children, age 12. And 9, and I am in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And I'd love to introduce Adam. So Adam, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, Yuling. I am an attorney who lives and works in Pittsburgh. I'm married to a healthcare consultant, and we have three little kids, ages 9, 7, and 3. Fourth grade, first grade, and then should be in preschool, but is not because of the pandemic. So,
and speaking of the pandemic, I know we've all been experiencing some version of remote learning. How is that remote learning going?
It's going better than it was a year ago at this time when we were first thrust into it. But throughout the 12 months, it's been challenging, to say the least. All kinds of stressful and new and different experiences throughout the time.
That's fair enough. And Dori, I know you've been experiencing full-time remote learning as well.
Certainly. It was a rough start, I would say, last March, early on. And when my husband and I were each too busy to help out, it was interesting to see each child be able to reach out to grandparents who are retired, to get help, or they are able to reach out to their aunts or uncles to ask questions when mom and dad just were not available.
What would you say to a school administrator? Like, here's the one thing you should do to keep me engaged moving forward.
It's simple. Weekly communication, that weekly email blast on Monday or on a Friday is something that, trust me, goes the extra mile. And it means a lot. When you hear from the administration and the teachers, you feel heard and seen, and it goes a long way. So I would not diminish that. Once a week, at least, communication is key to make parents feel good and feel like they're a part of the community.
Whether it's something simple like we're looking for more tape or Kleenex or Clorox wipes in our classroom to this is, long-term what the school district needs, and this is how the community can help in those ways, to gap fill or otherwise. Not every parent, but a lot of parents, through this pandemic will now recognize, that they can be helpers. And so take advantage of that. And, as we return to what's normal, get parents more involved to the extent that they can.
This process has probably expanded the tools in our toolkit, right? Whether it's the learning or the parent engagement, or the ways that parents and educators can be. And the question is, what tools will remain or be expanded upon post-pandemic?
We've done the teacher-parent conferences over Zoom, and I don't know that we do need to step into the school building to do those teacher-parent conferences in the future. So perhaps after the pandemic, there is this, there will be an opportunity for teacher-parent engagement that is choose your own adventure. Come into the school, do virtual. So that's kind of exposing ways of being in contact and what's comfortable for the teacher and comfortable for the parent.
Before COVID, what did you view as the most important purpose of education?
I think it was pretty much just to teach basic concepts to our kids, right? Reading, writing, arithmetic, science, social studies, art, music, just to build academic and study skills so that, you know, in time they're able to do their homework, they learn how to write an essay, they learn how to research a topic in the library or online, how to think critically. Basically, just to give them better intellectual capabilities and a broader knowledge base, right? Broader and deeper knowledge base. That's the way I just viewed traditional school pre-COVID. What this has really driven home to me is the importance of the social aspect of school, right? Social development on one hand, particularly with young kids, you know, learning how to deal with their peers, learning how to listen attentively, learning how to respect a classmate's input, but also kind of social growth and understanding of your community, of the people in the community, of the differences in the people in the community. We just aren't able to take them out in the community as frequently or teach them about things through immersive opportunities that we normally would be able to do.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and opening up about your personal stories with education. We are very grateful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. Thank you all for joining. I'm Rebecca Winthrop from the Center for Universal Education, where I'm a senior fellow and with my colleague Emiliana Vegas and the co-director. Please, as we dive into this conversation, submit your questions at hashtag family engagement. A huge thanks for kicking us off to our partner in our parent engagement project, Kidsburg, who Anta, Adam, and Dory, who are in Western Pennsylvania, and shared their very specific experiences and thoughts and reflections of being a parent amid COVID and education. And today's topic, as everybody knows, is thinking about parent engagement and how important it is. And from our perspective, we are very focused on making sure that this increased spotlight on family school partnerships, parent-teacher partnerships doesn't fade after COVID happens, much the way Adam says, you know, a lot of parents have realized they can be real helpers and allies in their children's education. How can we leverage that? From our end, we believe and know from the literature that parent engagement has always been important well before COVID and will remain to be important well after COVID. There's lots of research to show that if educators and parents can really form very close partnerships and move parent engagement from just asking parents to be involved here or there episodically in the school community, but a real partnership, children benefit, and particularly children who are the most marginalized, children who perhaps don't, like Dory and Adam, have two working parents at home and who are struggling with either job loss or a range of things. And we know that type of partnership between educators and parents, if done well, can boost children's academic and socio-emotional outcomes. But we also think that parent engagement is really very important because parents' voices deserve to be at the table for shaping what education looks like. We know education in society plays an important role. It's one of the few institutions that both reflects social norms, but also shape social norms. So what schools privilege as what is taught, but more importantly, how it's taught, what success looks like, what the main purpose of education can be, can really shape our society, can shape how we think about learning to live together and what our aspirations are individually and collectively. And so for us, Parent engagement is an essential component of navigating education change, which COVID obviously showed, although we started our project on parent engagement before COVID. And that a part of that education change is system transformation. And we think a lot about system transformation here at the Center for Universal Education. I'm showing you a slide that is rather detailed. I'm not going to talk through all the little details, but the main message is that there you can think about system transformation kind of three stages: practical, structural, and cultural. This is from Daniela Meadows, Leverage Points. She's a big thinker in the system transformation theory, and many thanks to our colleagues at Populous for providing a simplified graphic of her theory. And a lot of time is spent in education change and system transformation and reform on the practical, changing measurable things, et cetera. But really, when you want to have a big influence on an education system, you need to tackle the structural and the cultural. Structural being thinking anew about power dynamics and relationships. For us, parents having a real seat at the table includes creating new feedback loops and is a part of structural change that could help transform systems. And certainly the cultural is really around what is the goal of an education system? What's the purpose? What is the public mindset? Parents and families and communities have to be engaged in that type of conversation. And our work for many years at the center across many different portfolios has been very focused, thinking about the ultimate purpose of education and the fact that most education systems, not all, but most around the world are set up to be deeply unequal and are providing a few kids with the strong academics and 21st century skills they really need to thrive in this world, and many kids without those. And we are really focused on closing that equity gap so all kids have the full suite of competencies and skills they need to thrive. So that's why we've started this work initially around parent engagement, parent voice, community participation. And we are very fortunate to have been exploring together this question of navigating education change and the role of parent engagement in it with our Family Engagement and Education Network members. These members are from many places around the world, 14 jurisdictions, and we have over 41 project collaborators, and so multiple in each jurisdiction. The vast majority are government leaders, but we also have civil society leaders and two private school networks who are engaged. You can see the suite here. We newly have colleagues in Brazil coming to join the network, but they have not yet participated in the survey findings that we're going to share with you, so they're not highlighted here yet. And together, we have conducted a survey of over 25,000 parents. These were parents who had children in formal schooling from preschool through to end of secondary school. It was more or less evenly distributed across the age ranges. In each jurisdiction, whether it's we work nationally or within a state or within a district, the survey was representative, at least within 5% margin of error. And we did the survey in 15 languages. And if anybody would like a copy of the survey to use it for your own purposes, please do contact us later. I'll leave you an email at the end of my presentation to do that. We'd be happy to share. And so what we're doing today is sharing just top line messages from this survey. And this is the first of various installments. We are doing a survey of teachers. We're doing focus groups of parents and teachers. And in the fall, in September, we'll be sharing a culmination of our findings in a big report and a playbook. And so one of the things I want to do is just walk you through our top three key takeaways from our survey findings. And the first key takeaway is around parents' aspirations. we see that sort of more or less across all the jurisdictions parents surveyed, across the parents across the jurisdiction surveyed, most parents are desiring a new, what we call a new type of education, in quotes. What we mean by that is that they, when they asked about sort of the education outcomes they wish, they want a mix of both traditional academic outcomes that they're looking for, but also socio-emotional outcomes. When asked about sort of the types of teaching and learning approaches they're interested in, they're very interested in and much more interactive, engaged teaching and learning approaches versus just sort of information passage or direct instruction models. And for some, not all, for some of parents in the communities we surveyed, when they, the indicators they look at when they judge if a school is of good quality and good for their child, are a variety, including is my kid performing well academically, but also a range of socio-emotional development outcomes around socializations with friends and enjoying school, etc. So that's what we mean by parents desiring a new kind of education. A second takeaway is around parents' influences. We ask parents what really shapes their thinking about their children's education. And we were thinking post-secondary education preparation and university scores, sort of admittance would be very, very high on the list. And actually, and perhaps not surprisingly for anyone who is a parent or works in schools, by far and away, the vast strongest influences are their own children and their children's teachers. And we also asked about, it was clear from the survey that parents really desire stronger alignment and relationships with their teachers. And so it really means that this sort of parent teacher child relationship is ripe for strengthening. If we think about an important lever for navigating change and improving children's outcomes in education. Our third takeaway, which is a little bit meta, is about the distinctiveness of communities. And although there were these two big broad trends across the data, you will see as I turn in a minute to show you some more detailed graphics of the data that communities are quite distinct. And that really what our takeaway is that you have to, if you're an education leader, an educator, a minister of education, et cetera, really make sure that the education community takes the time to get to know the parents in your community, because they do have different sort of sets of beliefs, aspirations, et cetera. And getting to know your parents is really the first step to building a trusting relationship and building that type of parent educator true partnership or school family partnership that is so crucial for successful parent engagement. So I am going to turn to some graphics in a minute. And I just wanted to note that when we talk about parents, we are talking about family members, primary caregivers. We use that word interchangeably. So it's not just a biological parent. So first, let's turn to the purpose of education. We ask parents, this is teeny tiny, you won't see it, but I'm going to walk you through it. These are all our 14 jurisdictions. We ask parents, based on sort of academic outcomes, economic outcomes, civic outcomes, or socio-emotional outcomes of school, what was the most important purpose of school for parents? And at the very top in the blue, you'll see there's sort of a belief shape for each of the jurisdictions, which you see are actually quite distinct. The very top in the blue, it's parents who said that they really felt the socio-emotional outcome was the most important. On the right is the orange, it's the academic outcome, the purpose of school. On the bottom in gray is the economic sort of preparation for skills for work and the job market. And on the left, the yellow is the civic outcome. So helping to create good citizens. And the couple things I want you to take away from this chart, which of course you can examine in depth on the website in our report, is that the vast majority of jurisdictions really did privilege the socio-emotional outcome alongside the academic outcome. And those are in the blue box. And then you also see that there's some three jurisdictions, two districts in the US and South Africa who really privileged the academic outcome, and then two jurisdictions in the yellow box, which were both in India, who really privileged the sort of civics purpose of school. And the other big takeaway is that the shapes of each jurisdiction are different. They're not all the same. And you can see there's one at the very bottom, which is Colombia, of the blue box, which is almost a perfect diamond, which means it's almost a quarter of each parents. There's a little more who care about socio-emotional outcomes, but care about each purpose of school. And again, the takeaway here is it's really important to know your parents and to think about doing this type of mapping of parents' aspirations when you start, when you educate people in the education community, start thinking about engaging parents. One of the things that's very interesting also is when we ask parents, how closely do they think their aspirations for the purpose of school for their children align to the aspirations of their children's teachers? So the beliefs that their children's teachers have. And you'll see in this next chart, which is again, also hard to see, but the where the lines are not exactly the same, it means that there were very parents believe, say they want one purpose, but they believe teachers desire a totally different purpose. You'll see that particularly on the last row at the bottom, Botswana, UK, places in the US, and some, where some jurisdictions are almost one for one. That means they feel they are in lockstep. Their perception is that they are in lockstep with their children's teachers. So again, that's another dimension, this alignment and perception of how parents feel, how aligned they feel, is an important input into knowing your parents. Another reason, not just the purpose and outcomes of school, another reason we see parents wanting this new type of education is in pedagogy. This, we asked all the jurisdictions, but this happens to be a question in our nationally representative samples from Ghana, South Africa, and Colombia, where we asked parents their preference around more interactive pedagogies versus more traditional direct instruction. And by far and away, parents really privileged and preferred the interactive pedagogy. And we see that also in other jurisdictions when we ask similar questions. A third thing that we wanted to highlight was parents' influence. Of not parents' influence, the influences parents listen to when they shape how they think about their children's education. Is it good quality? Is it not, et cetera? You can see all the different options we gave parents. By far and away, the opinion of my child and my children's educators were very much the top. And interestingly, you see on the sort of second row, which were much less mentioned, opinion of other parents. Parents are not looking to other parents, which to us says they don't really see sort of the collective power that communities and parents might have in engaging in discussions around education. And so taken together, again, just to repeat, our main takeaway is that it is incredibly important when navigating education change, as COVID has shown, but we hope that this lesson will not be wasted as we think about educational change and system transformation moving into the future, to know the parents in your community, if you are an education leader, if you're educators, and to really build a strong, trusting relationship with them. So to finish, before we kick off a discussion, I just wanted to let everyone know that if they want access to the survey or want to get involved in our project in any way, please email leapfrogging@brookings.edu. And now what I'm really pleased to do is to turn with that sort of rapid fire, turn to our panelists, who I would invite all to join us on the screen. We have Paul Lorette, who is the assistant superintendent of Sea to Sky School District from the British of Columbia. We have Tepi Mashtang, who is co-founder and country director of Young Love, a nonprofit working in Botswana. She's also the chairperson of the Botswana National Youth Council. We also have Carrie Jane Packman, who's Executive Director of Programs for Parentkind in the UK, which is the National Parent Union. And we have Samar Bajaj, Program Manager of India Programs from the Michael and Susan Dell Foundation. All of them are part of our Family Engagement Education Network members. And welcome, everybody. We're so, so very pleased to have you. So we have been talking in our network member meetings, as the survey has been ongoing and we're doing focus groups, just about parent engagement, how you're all dealing with it. And just to start, I'm wondering, Carrie Jane, if I can turn to you first, and then for all of you, just quickly, what are you hearing from the parents in your jurisdiction? We heard from Adam and Dory, and they were kind to share their experiences. And of course, there's very diverse experiences of parents, including those who are out of work and really suffering. So we'd love to hear, how are parents faring? What are their barriers to engagement? Carrie Jane, let's start with you, and we'll go on a quick round robin.
So I think for me, the barriers to engagement continue to be the same barriers before COVID. It's just that they have broken down a little bit more. We've been tracking this for the last 6 years, the barriers to parental engagement, and that is around, it's always been fear. If you've had a bad experience at school, and you've got to go through those school gates again, or talk to a teacher, there is that element of fear around it. And typically within the UK, if you're contacted by a teacher, it's because something's gone wrong. There's also the element of parents not being asked to be engaged, and it seems so simple when you say it out loud, and I think the bit that has changed considerably on the barriers for us is that there used to be I don't have time, but that was always an element, I don't have time to go into the school building, and now parents have the time because there is virtual options that have been put forward. So I'd say those are the main barriers that we're experiencing at the moment.
Great. Thanks. Samar, let's go to India. What are you hearing from your parents? What are they facing?
So I think a lot of parents are very anxious for schools to reopen and they want their kids back. I also think there has been like a renewed understanding of like how difficult the education process is, the burdens that, you know, teachers take on. And I think there is sort of mutual respect on both sides, which has really built up over the last year.
That bodes very well and talks a little bit, both of you talked a little bit about what Dory talked about at the beginning about choose your own adventure, new approaches to being able to stay engaged. Tuppy, let's go to you in Botswana. What are you hearing from the parents you work with?
Great. Thank you so much for that, Rebecca. I would say that typically parents haven't been engaged actively in child's learning. So, you know, in Botswana, they would be engaged through parent-teacher association conferences or even at the end of the term where they're going to work, you know, to collect the report card. But now we are seeing that, you know, it is possible for parents to be engaged whilst working very much hand in hand with their children. I would say even before, you know, parents didn't really know the abilities or the learning levels of their children. And this was also one barrier that would just to say that, you know, this can just be left with teachers because parents, you know, expect teachers to do their job. But I think now what we're learning and seeing is that, you know, there is a possible way to engage parents and bring them much closer to their children's education, which is really, really important.
Great. And Paul, what about you?
Yeah, so, you know, like we've heard from others, we've had a lot of engagement with our parents. Actually, in our area, we have a wide range of I guess, engagement in terms of we have parents who are very engaged all the time, and we have parents who, you know, we really have to work to engage with them, and it's challenging. And so, you know, during this time, the use of technology has really helped us to be able to reach out more to different groups of parents. And actually, you know, in some ways, I would say COVID has increased the level of engagement with many of our communities, just in terms of, you know, how parents have been concerned about what learning at home looked like when we were in that stage last year. This year, all of our students are full-time in class. So that's different, but also, you know, during that time, I would say, again, parent engagement levels have increased just due to everyone wanting things to improve and get better for their student learning.
Great. Thank you. I wanted to dig in a little bit more on how you all have been working with parents in the past, present, how you're thinking about doing it moving forward. Samar, can we start with you? Can we start with India? You represent a philanthropic organization. You partner very closely with the Department of Education in Himachal Pradesh State in India. And I'm just curious if you can tell us a little bit about, you know, why has MSDF partnered with HP, but more importantly, why has parent engagement become a topic that you've been working on? And, you know, tell us a little bit about your work and if there are any surprises over the sort of last year or so. I don't mean the surprise of a global pandemic, but in sort of parent engagement work. And there was a question that came in, actually two similar questions, one from Jasmine, one from Sabine, really asking, and I'm wondering if you can try to answer this, asking about how can we sustain this type of parent engagement even as the pandemic subsides. I know that was something that Adam brought up at the beginning, and it's something that you have been thinking about because the Department of Ed has done all sorts of creative things. And rather than going back to normal, they're thinking about sustaining it. So tell us a little bit about your work.
Great. Thanks, Rebecca. So maybe I'll just give a little bit of an introduction to the jurisdiction itself and our work. So the state of Himachal Pradesh is a relatively small state in the north of India. But I think in context of many school systems, it's a large system. So it has about 800,000 students and 15,000 schools that the state actually looks at. It's a little bit of a remote area. It's a pretty hilly, you know, mountainous region. Lots of schools are very far flung. Many of them, you know, are cut off in the winter months and actually don't have good connectivity. And I would say that, you know, our work has been, we've been in the state for the last 5 years. We've worked on multiple topics, largely in the realm of systems transformation that, you know, you set us up with in the beginning of this conversation. And most of our work has been on either strengthening the academic inputs that are coming into the classroom or, you know, sort of adding more efficiency to the administrative side so that the system can actually, you know, create that space for teaching and learning to happen. And our eventual focus in the state, you know, and what we all work towards is actually just improving the quality of learning outcomes in the state. We did have some surprises as we went along. So I would say, you know, very similar to what Tepi was saying, I don't think parent engagement has really been at the top of our agenda. We've looked at, you know, the large part of the work has been saying, okay, like, you know, teachers are the most important. How can we really equip them? You know, very tangible things in terms of just, you know, adding more teachers in schools because lots of schools don't have enough teachers, creating, you know, materials that they can follow easily, you know, question banks and like lots of, and skills to just make sure that, you know, they are fully equipped. We looked at a bunch of changes in terms of, you know, putting in more technology into schools, like both in the administration of schools as well as in, you know, the classroom. And parents and the community were really just thought about as a way that, you know, like how can we just help them to ask a few tight questions and hold the system accountable. And that's really how we had thought about their role. But the last, you know, like the last 12 months have changed a lot. So I would say the biggest surprise for us has been just the level of interest and ownership that parents have taken when it comes to their children's education. When we've shifted to remote learning, you've suddenly got the parent really being at the center stage of this. Like they have to anchor the remote learning schedule. Many of them have 2, 3, 4 kids. You know, they have to make sure that, you know, all of the kids are logged into their classes, they've received the material, they're actually doing their homework, you know, sending things back. And then what we saw in India, given that we're a very under-resourced market, we actually had, you know, like, the parent, like typically there's only one device in the whole household belonging to the father, which was actually being shared by all the kids in the household. So starting from there, and, you know, like we had very simple ways of providing information. A lot of the content was being sent as video links over WhatsApp. Worksheets were also being sent over WhatsApp. Kids were actually, you know, doing their homework, taking pictures, sending them back to teachers, and then, you know, receiving feedback on what they had done. So it was, I would say, like, you know, very quick, frugal innovation. We have a good Indian word for it. It's called jugaad. And I think it really came to life in the pandemic. So that's really been, I would say, the big surprise for us. About 4 or 5 months into the pandemic, the state actually did like its first virtual EPTA. And, you know, I think 80% of parents in the state actually participated.
That and is Samar, EPTA meaning a PTA meeting electronically with through a cell phone.
Yes. Right? Yeah. So, and it wasn't just one format. So I think Dori picked this up, like choose your own adventure. So teachers tried everything possible. They were making phone calls to parents. They were doing Zoom calls, you know, like video calls where there were multiple parents and you could interact. There were WhatsApp messages being sent. There was SMS being sent. And then in some cases where, you know, like the situation, like the COVID situation wasn't so bad, parents were also meeting teachers one-on-one or coming to schools in sort of limited hours and slots. So it was really like, I think on all fronts, just trying to open up every single channel of communication that was possible. And adding all of those up together, they were actually able to reach out to 80% of parents, which is over 700,000 parents in the state. So I think just the level of involvement has, you know, and the way that the system has really come together in, you know, with very limited resources to try and just make sure that we can do the best for our kids has been very encouraging. And I think the other big one has been obviously that, you know, technology, like it can take us many years to get used to it, but then an external event happens and, you know, like suddenly it's just the new normal. So that's really where we are today. I'll maybe just take a couple of minutes on the sustainability point and how we're thinking of this going forward. And then I'll hand it back to you in case you have any follow-up questions.
I think that would be great to sort of answer Jasmine and Sabine's question, or this is what you're going to do, right? About how we move it forward. Great. And then we'll have to move to the next person. Thank you.
Great. So I think, you know, our theory really is that why we've seen such high levels of engagement is because the state now has like a backbone to really like create that engagement. I would say 5 years ago, we didn't even have like names and contact numbers of all parents digitized in a manner that, you know, you could set these communication channels up. And teachers and even officials were not really like well trained or didn't really, you know, like they weren't like that fast. Like things were still being done like on pen and paper, official letters being sent out. So now I think with the system in place, we definitely want to continue using like technology for the parent teacher interactions, you know, from like less than 20% participation, we saw 80% during the pandemic. And hopefully we can now stick to that as schools start to reopen.
Right.
The other big one in the state, I think that we've been working on is again, how do we use technology to just disseminate more information? Dori again picked up the topic of the weekly email blast. And what we've seen even in the survey results is that parents in India are actually very happy to get daily communication on, you know, like whether the child has come to school or they've been playing truant, you know, what homework they've been allocated for the day, you know, what are the exams coming up, what are the things that they need to prep for so that they can really support that journey at home. So what we've done in the state is that we have like we built a teacher to parent communication platform, which will allow teachers to send like this regular messaging out. And a lot of it will be templatized. The teacher will not have to do all of it. So for example, like they'll record attendance in class and, you know, immediately the kids who are not there, parents will get a message saying they're not there.
Thank you, Samar, and so on and so forth
for homework.
It's fascinating. And I'm sorry, I have to move on to the next. It's fascinating.
Thanks,
you guys are doing from, so I want to move from Samar's great example of all this creative choose your own adventure, massive new forms of communication. Paul, I want to move to you. You are head of leading a district, a school district, and you have pre-COVID done a lot to really do deep engagement with family members and really try to build that close, trusting relationship. You know, and you've talked about how that's so important in the transformation agenda that the state has. So I was wondering if you could share with us a little bit about what that transformation agenda is, what the motivations are and the role of parent engagement in that. And also, there was a question that came in. We have lots, so many great questions. We won't be able to get to them all, but Tina asked, how do you engage parents in rural or low-income communities? And I know that's something you've been doing for a long time, so it'd be great to speak to that a little bit too. Thanks, Paul. Unmute.
Oh, I win the prize for being the first to forget to hit that button. Well, thanks very much. It is a pleasure to be here. And so in our school district, we have about 5,000 students, roughly, maybe 13 schools, 14 schools. Our provincial government about maybe 6 or 7 years ago embarked in quite an ambitious redesign of our curriculum. About 10 years before that, our school district did something very similar with our education plan. And so we were recognizing that, you know, our approach just wasn't modern. It wasn't serving our students well. And that was about the time where there was a real global move towards big change in education. And, you know, it was a really exciting time and still is. And so one of the big challenges for us, and just for everyone's understanding, in our school district, we have approximately 12% of our student enrollment are Indigenous students. There are of First Nations Indigenous ancestry. And so back about 10 years ago, we were very concerned about our data and our school completion rates. Our Indigenous students were graduating somewhere in the 40 to 50% range. And what that means is that for this cohort of students starting in grade 8, about 45% would graduate in a 6-year time period. For all students, including everyone, including Indigenous learners, it was somewhere around 76%. So really unacceptable. And so we embarked on a very ambitious transformation, modernization plan. And so in a nutshell, what happened was we engaged with our community. We used a digital platform called ThoughtStream to start. We used a backward design approach. We asked our community, what are the skills and knowledge and competencies that you feel your students need to be successful in the future? And this went out to our parents, our community, to First Nations elders. We took all of this information back, thousands of pieces of feedback from the community, worked over the course of 5 or 6 full days with a large representative team of teachers, of parents, again, Indigenous elders, board members. And we crafted an education plan. And over the last 10 years, I do want to just make a nod to the visual that Rebecca used earlier on system transformation, because I would say that it's very true. Culturally, as our education plan became part of our district culture, it was really our strongest leverage point. So there were a lot of specific things that we did that I won't get into, but to make a long story short, it is a success story for us in that when we look at our completion rates now, 10 years later, and this has been a gradual change, our Indigenous students are now graduating at approximately 95%. And when we look at all students, it's likely in the 98%. So not a big difference. Virtually all of our students are graduating. And that is huge. And it also gets back to this notion that what we do to support our most vulnerable students is good for all students, and all students benefit from that. And we've seen proof of that over time. So, you know, I would say that initial parent engagement and the engagement along those 10 years has been really critical in our success. We've been working very closely with our Indigenous communities, you know, to ensure that we're on track. And I would just add that beyond the graduation rates, now we certainly are uncovering some issues around systemic racism. We still have issues where many of our most vulnerable learners and Indigenous learners graduate with not quite as many options as other students in some cases. And so we're working really hard to address that. And as you can well imagine, it's bringing out a lot of engagement in our community, which is an excellent thing. So how do we engage with our difficult to reach communities? It just takes a lot of work. You know, we reach out, we go into community. We have people who work directly in community. We've opened up some small schools in some of our remote communities where we used to bus students, 2 hours one way. It's a long story to tell. I know we're short on time, but yeah, thank you. I hope that gives you a sense.
That certainly does. Thank you. And that idea of backward design is really interesting. Right. So it's sort of an education jurisdiction really doing a co-creation exercise, and the fact that you're going to them, that right. You know, creating small schools, like really structurally trying to make sure that engagement is there and it's not just a one-off, right. Is fantastic. Carrie Jane, I want to go to you next. We've gone from Samar, from new forms of communication, to Paul, which is really around sort of how can a district reach out and co-create. And you represent parents across the UK, and it's more, you know, sort of parent kind, sort of parents driving change. And that, I think, is a really interesting sort of case study for all of us. So, you know, can you tell us a little bit about ParentKind and, you know, what you do, and tell us a little bit about how you work to represent parents' voice in national education policy making? And I know you have a blueprint for family-friendly schools, which is a big part of what you've been doing to sort of push this agenda along. And I was also wondering if you could speak, there's a question that's come in from Kenzie, who was talking about, you know, what type of training do we need to give to educators or school leaders or people in the education system to support their ability to engage parents? So over to you, Carrie Jane.
Thank you, Rebecca. So I think it's important to say that we're not education specialists. We're not teachers. We represent a parents in their child's education. And we do that first and foremost with being the largest network of parent teacher associations across the UK. And we provide them with specialist fundraising support, and it's all driven by parents around funding schools and putting more into schools. But our journey started 65 years ago. We've been working on parental engagement. And it was through a group of parents that pioneered that actually parents should be listened to, not just on a local level, but a regional level and a national level. And we've been continuing that as we go through. So what we do is we gather parent voice on different issues within education, and we represent them to policymakers. But what we did a few years, it was a good couple of years ago now, was that we had a lot of a wealth of data that was there from parents on how they wanted parental engagement to work. So what we did was we produced a blueprint for parent-friendly schools, which wasn't driven from a teacher's perspective. It's been very much driven from a parent perspective on how they would like their schools to engage with them more. And I think this was way before the pandemic. And then suddenly the pandemic hit, and we've been thrown into the biggest parental engagement pilot ever. And where we've been tracking parental views throughout, and parents are saying, yes, they want to be more involved with their child's education, but they don't know how. Now they're suddenly thrown into this environment where our schools have only just opened as of last week. So we're still fresh on the other side of this, but they're now thrown into where they have to have more information. And we found that over the past year, the bit that I find most exciting around this is that parents' confidence has increased considerably over the past year with supporting their child's learning. And our blueprint is designed for school leaders, but it comes from a parent perspective, as I said, and it's based around five key drivers. They don't work individually, so it becomes very much from a whole school approach. Everybody needs to be involved in parental engagement. That's from the receptionist to the cleaner to the person to your volunteers. Everybody needs to have that view of it. So it comes from a leadership perspective, and there has to be that leadership, that ethos, and the resources that support that. And that comes down to just as simple as a welcoming environment for parents, signage, making sure that they can get to the right places. It's also around effective two-way communication. And I think parents have experienced this more than ever. And schools are now realizing that actually they need to communicate differently with different groups of parents and have a range of parents. But it's not just about broadcasting. They've had to bring parents more on board with what they're doing. So we've seen some great examples around from schools, really heartfelt letters going out to parents saying, look, we're in the same boat. Let's work in partnership around this. To also one of the other positives that we've had, and it's so simple, but it is that using technology. It's that virtual parent evening. It's being able to communicate in different ways with parents. And I think it comes back to one of the things that Dory was saying, is that engaging with parents no longer has to happen inside the school building. The third element of it is around supporting learning at home. So parents are more aware than ever of what their children are now learning. And I think there's a fear element every time that the numbers spike here, that we're going to go into lockdown again and they're not going to know what their child is learning. So I don't think this is going to go backwards. But they're also, from a UK perspective, requesting more resources than ever. So they want more online lessons. They want more resources that supports them as parents to understand what their child is learning, so that they have this confidence to support them. The involvement in school life is kind of, I would say, slowed down a little bit on the fourth one, because it actually does involve physically being in the school building. But parents, schools are finding other ways to engage groups of parents. So parent councils, parent forums, looking at the decision making, having reading with parents, but on Zoom. They're finding all those other ways. And obviously a PTA is a key part of that, but it's a bit restricted at the moment with fundraising. But we're finding other ways of doing that. And then there's the community engagement. I think this links to what Paul's saying as well, and a number of other people. Will be some parents that just won't engage. They just won't. And you're going to have to go out and find them. And the pandemic has proved that even more, where we've had teachers knocking on doors. Are you okay? Do you need anything? And we've also found within that what was previously said was around discovering that they're sharing devices. And that's why children haven't been so engaged.
Carrie,
just to come back, just to touch on your training side of it. With our blueprint is all supported by training. So it is worth going and having a look. It's all available on our website, and you can see all the training that is available there. And it's all delivered online. So you can take part wherever you are.
Perfect. Perfect. And it's training on the five pillars of the blueprint, I guess.
Which yes.
Is, okay, fantastic.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Carrie Jane. And Tepi, I'm going to turn to you to round out our final perspective in the journey of parent engagement. And to finish us off here, you work at a nonprofit. And one of the things I found so fascinating is Young Love's journey of really an education, sort of national education leader, saying they wanted to partner with families and communities to try to drive demand for more interactive, pedagogical, differentiated instruction, which is teaching at the right level, which you guys have scaled. And it was could you tell us a little bit about your journey from sort of that type of parents as allies and communities as allies to through COVID, where you've really pivoted and actually helped parents themselves step into supporting teaching and learning, and where you think you're going? Thank you.
That sounds good. So just a really brief background of Young Love. So we are one of the largest organizations in the country and very much closely work with government to implement, high impact health and education programming. So prior to the pandemic and, schools shutting down, we were, actively in schools, over 20% of all primary schools in the country. So we really were working very much at school level as our delivery model. And 3 days before we heard that schools were going to be shut down, we quickly, collected 10,000 of phone numbers from parents and students that we work with. And the real motivation was to say, how do we still, remain connected to students, especially because schools were going to shut down. So currently, right now, we are grateful that schools are back up. But they are also using a different system called, the double shift system, where half of the students attend in the morning and then the other half in later in the afternoon. So already then there is, some learning loss as it's not the typical school program. So what we did was collected 10,000 of phone numbers. We also ran, a rapid trial, bringing, some of the first experimental evidence on minimizing learning loss during a pandemic, together with our colleagues at Columbia University. What we have found is that there was an initial take-up rate of parents wanting to receive, the interventions that we were delivering at 70%. Though this is not, at 100, it was, an increased take-up rate with their parents really seemed, wanting to be engaged and involved in remote learning services. We implemented two interventions. The first one was just sending, bulk messages, weekly bulk text messages, including problem of the day questions, which are really simple and very straightforward questions tailored to the students' abilities. And then the second intervention was a combination of the SMSs as well as a phone call as a follow-up method to the parents to be able to, see if the students were understanding the questions or if they had any questions that they had, to the facilitators. And one of the things that we had learned early on was for us to really use low technology as a way to increase accessibility, but also again in a way such that it is a very much simple and straightforward method of delivery of information. So many of the solutions that we have found specifically that were designed by the government, who were looking at e-learning services, which required one to have a gadget or, access to internet. But however, in Botswana, the rates are really, really low. No one barely has internet. But there is someone, right, at household level that has access to just a simple phone. So that is really why, we started with the idea of low tech as one way to deliver messaging to students during school closures, but even post when schools were open. So that said, we have really learned, you know, quite a lot just from this experience, where we're sharing the results with governments as well as other policymakers to think more about innovative and cost-effective ways to boost learning during a pandemic and even beyond. The first lessons that we learned, we were able to increase learning levels, specifically with the phone and SMS arm, where we're able to really boost learning and also just really increase understanding of where students' levels are, as well as just communicating them to the parents. We also have found that during these interventions, we had a high engagement rate of over 80 to 85% of parents. So what we mean by there is that parents were now, you know, sitting with their child together, showing them the SMS that was delivered on their phone. And also when we did the phone calls, parents were actually there, you know, engaging in these materials, but also even asking and demanding for more. That at the end of our trial, we asked questions if we asked parents if they would like to still receive these kind of services, where 99% of parents said yes. And that is really encouraging, you know, feedback from the parents, but also just a lot of lessons learned on how to do this well over the phone. So as just a wrap up and a last message, you know, when we look at the take up rate, which our colleagues here have also mentioned, it's very important in thinking about, you know, engaging parents in remote learning services. There is scope for parents to actually be involved, not just passively, but directly be involved in their child's learning, but also just really seeing how they could continuously use technology that they have to actually make it possible. So as I've mentioned, even right. if the mom or the dad didn't have access to a phone, you know, the cousin next door had it. So it is actually possible. And that would be my last parting words.
Thank you. That's inspiring. And we will look to see what Young Love does moving forward post-pandemic, if there's a whole new approach to complementing teaching and learning in the classroom with parents. You guys are really on the cutting edge. So I just want to wrap up and say, Tepi and Paul and Carrie Jane and Samar, thank you all for being part of our Family Engagement Education Network, along with all the other members. Thank you for taking the time this morning, afternoon, evening, depending on your time zone, for sharing with us your story and your journey. And we wish everybody a good rest of your day. Thank you, everybody. Take care.